Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy morning show for you this morning. We're going to hear stories from the Hudson River and stories from the Hudson Market. Last night, Thursday, June 29th, WGXC's Tom DiPietro wandered around the market and talked to all sorts of characters. We're going to hear his stories shortly. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news and after Jason Martin is singing this song on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Waves controlled.
This is Sam Sebrin from Athens, and you are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Wave Farms Art Park is now open on Saturdays. Drop in for unannounced guided tours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. or book a tour in advance on other days. Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Accra is the home of the Art Park with 13 installations in the Study Center, the WGXC Accra Studio, and the Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors on Saturdays receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free and tours typically last 60 to 90 minutes. Again, on Saturdays, Wave Farms Art Park is open for drop-in visits anytime from noon to 6 p.m. from June through October. Stop by Wave Farm on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stuart Summer of Hillsdale, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXE sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxe.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXE Daily News for Friday, June 30th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. WNYT reports that a state of emergency because of flooding was issued in New Lebanon in Columbia County after a beaver dam in Massachusetts broke. The beaver dam broke in the Pittsfield State Forest in Berkshire County June 28th, sending much water into a nearby pond. That pond then overflowed, sending water down the mountain into New Lebanon. Residents reported 1 to 3 feet of water in their basements, with mud and debris on Main Street. The New York State Department of Transportation was on the scene. New Lebanon's website announced, quote, a state of emergency and a local emergency order for the town of New Lebanon due to emergency conditions produced by flooding that occurred in the vicinity of Main Street in the town of New Lebanon, unquote. Read more about this story at WNYT. Andrea Macco reports for Porcupine Soup that New Baltimore's Travel Plaza on Interstate 87 reopened June 29th after 2 years of renovations. Not all the new restaurants are open yet, but will be soon, according to the New York State Thruway Authority. Governor Kathy Hochul also announced on June 29th fewer temporary lane closures for road and bridge construction projects on New York State highways for the holiday weekend. AAA is predicting record traffic volumes this weekend, with up to 43.2 million people expected to be driving to their destinations, up 4% from 2019. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Raga Justin reports in the Times Union that Representative Paul Tonko crowed about Mainstreaming Addiction Treatment Act on June 29th at the newspaper's office building in Albany. Part of what the bill does is expand the number of medical professionals who can prescribe a medication called buprenorphine from 130,000 to 1.8 million people. Buprenorphine is a drug that is now a little easier to prescribe to people struggling with opioid addiction. Quote, "There is some progress afloat," unquote, Tonko said. The Albany County Congressional Representative also cited statistics from France, where they made access to drugs that can help with opioid addiction easier, where and overdose deaths declined nearly 80%, according to the National Institute of Health. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Representative Mark Molinaro, the Republican representing the 19th Congressional District, wants the Government Accountability Office to conduct a comprehensive study on how the COVID-19 pandemic impacted educational outcomes for students with disabilities. Molinaro said, quote, "I'm the father of four children, one of whom is on the autism spectrum. During the pandemic, parents like myself saw learning loss in their children firsthand. While many academic studies have sought to understand the full scope of these educational setbacks, very little attention has been given to the educational needs of students with disabilities," unquote. Molinaro explained that when school staff meet with parents of a child with a disability to develop an educational plan for the student, parents have the right to bring a third-party advocate such as a therapist, lawyer, or a knowledgeable family member. Molinaro is backing a bill to tell parents that. Quote, "Most parents are not aware of this right," unquote, Molinaro's office said in a statement. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, June 30th. Local early morning temperatures range from 52 degrees in Lexington to 60 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 65 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium and is expected to come down over the weekend. Today will be dry, partly cloudy, and warm with a high of 85 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures drop to 62 degrees. Then Saturday will be mostly dry with chances for random raindrops and a high of 85. Overnight, a few more raindrops will fall, and Sunday looks rainy with chances for storms and a high of 79. Overnight hits a muggy low of 67. Then on Monday, more rain and a high of 84. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:32 a.m., low tide at 7:37 a.m., high tide again at 12:56 p.m., and low tide once again at 7:30 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 75 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be average at 511 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are low chances of aurora tonight. The current sunspot number is 112. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
If it's not De La Slow, then it's not WRMS. We're cats in control, twisting and tuning until you're perfectly content. Special cat call goes out to the suckers at the donut shop. Thanks for serving it to me. Dark, hot, and no caffeine. Snuggle tight and hang loose, boys. It's time to groove to a De La Slow move on WRMS.
Next, WGXC's Tom DiPietro wandered around the Hudson Market in the public square in Hudson on Thursday, June 29th, and talked to all sorts of folks. Here is a short sample of some of his conversations.
Hey, Michael Harry, you got a minute? We're live on the radio. And I saw a picture of you in the paper today. It seems you were down in Washington, D.C.
That's correct. I was in Washington.
Can you tell our listeners what you were doing there?
Certainly. I was speaking to congressmen about climate, in particular the issue of permitting for new electric lines that need to be put in place so that our alternative or clean energy can get from the places where it's windy and brightly sunlit to the places where we use it, which are usually not the same place. And permitting has turned out to be the real bottleneck here of getting those lines in place can sometimes take 10 years.
Because and, of rights of way and...
Well, that's that part kind of it. The other part of it is that when you're going across state lines, the federal government needs to get involved, but the... Each state has what amounts to veto power over an interstate line. So if you have a wind farm, let's say, in Massachusetts, and you need the power to get to Pennsylvania, New York or New Jersey could say, no, we don't want that line to cross our territory.
And these are... Are lines usually put in underground, or does it matter?
Usually not.
Oh,
usually overhead, the regular high-tension lines that we've seen for many years.
And are some of the objections claiming to be environmental or not?
Well, part of it is objections, but part of it is just the way that it has always worked, which is for a federal line... you might involve several different federal agencies in the process, each of whom has their own way of doing things and their own timeline. So you start out with your application for the line to one agency. They look at it, and then when they're done, they pass it on to the next one and the next one, and it operates in a somewhat linear fashion.
Got it.
And so part of what Citizens Climate Lobby and many other organizations are asking for is that a coordinator for each application be established, which could be one of the agencies that gets called the lead agency, which is what we have done for many years here in New York State.
Right.
And so that lead agency takes care of coordinating the schedules and making sure that the system works the way that it is supposed to. The other aspect is the ability for a given state to veto what would otherwise be okay in the beginning and the end of the line. And that's something we feel ought to be part of the process, is to get the federal, the FERC, as they call it, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to be able to have a bit more powerful coordinating ability in the process to figure out each time to what extent, how much value will it be for the states that the line goes through. Who gets part of the share of the revenue generated by that line, and who pays for the installation of it in the first place?
So would the source of the energy be a private source or a public source?
It doesn't matter. It's just that it needs to get from where it's coming from to where it's going.
Right. So this is a classic federal versus local kind of issue.
Part of it is, yes. Yeah. And part of it is just intra-federal.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do we get the federal agencies to work together more effectively?
Right. And who are you visiting? Just Mark Molinaro, our congressman?
And Paul Tonko.
And Paul Tonko.
Who is our representative for the area surrounding Albany, the next district north of here.
Got it. And that, what was your reception?
Oh, very good.
They both liked the idea?
Yes. Mr. Molinaro is part of the Conservative Climate Caucus, which is the largest caucus in the House right now, of conservative members who want to talk about and do things having to do with climate.
Interesting.
So he was very encouraging to us about what work that he was already planning to do in regards to permitting reform.
That's great. Well, thank you, Michael, for talking to us. We're talking to Michael O'Hara, who's, what's your current title these days? And you're involved in the county.
A lot of different things. I'm the chair of the Environmental Management Council of Columbia County.
Okay. That's good enough. Thanks for talking to us, Michael. Former councilman. He ran for mayor at one point.
Exactly.
All around good citizen.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Yep. Bye-bye. Okay. One of my favorite former guests has just shown up in the park. We're live on the radio.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to make it here on a Thursday night. I've been missing this market.
Yeah, how come?
And I don't know, because I work a lot.
You do?
Yeah.
Doing what?
I'm an architectural designer. So I'm a little bit swamped right now.
Can I tell people who you are?
I'm Gia Albergo Del Mar.
That's right. You have a shop here on Warren Street.
I do. 325 Warren Street.
There you go.
Yeah. Albergo Del Mar. Custom upholstery. Custom draperies, design.
There you go.
Yeah.
Got it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Busy.
Swamped.
Up here or you're on the island?
Both.
Right?
Up here and it's Hampton season, you know?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Yeah.
On Long Island. That's way beyond me. Out of my realm.
It's Hampton's deadline season. 4th of July gets a little hairy.
So, like, people constantly redesigning their places out there?
Yeah. And COVID just put it right over the top, for sure.
Yeah.
And a lot of people moving out there still. Steve's actually at David Yerman's house today, you know, the jeweler.
Yes, I do.
He moved out there recently, so.
The young one or the father or the?
The father. He's
the son,
out there.
I met the son once over there.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I never realized they came to Hudson.
Yeah. Many years ago.
There's a lot of ties with out east and Hudson Valley, for sure.
I tell you, I like the Yerman products.
I do too.
When I got to figure out what to buy the wife, I just go Yerman.
It's easy.
Right?
It is kind of like, it suits everyone. And every lady likes it.
There you go.
It is. Oh, it's a go-to.
Does Steve, your husband, know that?
Yeah, he does. He has a little experience with David Yerman. I have a few pieces myself.
So we're talking to Gia Albergo
Del Mar. Yeah.
I was just trying to get the middle one right. And their shop is on Warren Street. What's the number again?
325 Warren Street.
325.
Next door to the Opera House.
Next door to the Opera House. Yeah. And it's all kinds of design.
Yep.
Everything from drapes to whatever.
Yeah. Anything.
Yeah. And Steve does all the hard work, right?
Yeah. I do the design and Steve has to make it all.
There you go.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for having talking to us.
I'm so happy to see you.
I think all you're going to get here today is eggs and lettuce.
I see. But that's all right.
And some bread.
No, there's some good things.
You eat bread?
I do.
Okay. Well,
I do eat bread.
You're lucky, then.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I'm seeing that.
Nice seeing you, Gia.
Oh,
by the way, how's your kid?
Good. She's really good, yeah. She's
good.
Doing good. Thank you so much.
Hey, man,
how you doing? Good. I'm live on the radio right now.
Oh,
you
wonderful.
You got a minute?
Yeah,
oh,
sure.
Oh, why don't you talk about your new gig?
Oh, Whale Belly Food Truck?
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome, man.
Go.
We're right outside the Upper Depot Brewing Company.
And I'm talking to?
John Spoto.
Yeah,
owner and chef of the Whale Belly Food Truck.
Oh, it's your truck.
It is my truck. Yeah, man, absolutely.
Tell us, like, what's unique about it.
So we have a beautiful smoker on the back of it. So we do a lot of, like, really fun, not pure barbecue, but we do a lot of smoked essence to our food. Work with a lot of great local farms. Lover's Leap Farm provides us with all our pork, and I'm here at the farmer's market trying to pick up some fun herbs and whatnot for a special this weekend. So,
cool.
Yeah, man, we try
to
keep it fresh.
Got a lot.
They do. I actually just picked up some herbs from there myself. I got some oregano and some parsley from there. So,
essential.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And what's your hours over there?
So, we are open at the moment Wednesday through Friday, 4 to 9, Saturday, 12 to 9, and Sunday, 1 to 6. Hopefully, opening up for lunch during the week soon. So,
you smell what I smell?
I do. I 100% do immediately. So, yeah, man.
That's
so,
cool.
Yeah, it's been great so far. We opened in March, and it's been going great, and we're looking forward to a fun summer in Hudson. So,
do you take that on the road at all?
No, I don't. At the moment, I don't. We're just stationary there. But, you know, down the road, maybe that can be, you know, an option.
And John has had a long history cooking here in Hudson.
That's true.
I remember from Daba, from grazing.
Mm-hmm.
What have I left out?
I mean, in around Columbia County, we did, you know,
you're
I did
over at Gracie's.
I did Gracie's. I did Local 111. So, right. Yeah, I've had my foot in the Columbia County food industry for a minute. So,
cool.
Hey, man.
So, I'll have to stop by. I didn't realize they had food there, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We
I
got
was
it.
Avoiding it because it's just like beer and I don't drink.
Yeah, anymore. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no. So, food's cool. There and we serve anybody, whether you're at the brewery or not. Even if you just want to come off the street,
we pack it. What's it called again?
Whale Belly.
Whale Belly.
Yeah, it's actually a type of train car.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, sticking with the theme of Upper Depot, we did, like, cool. A train theme. So, got and it. Also Hudson has the whaling theme, and then there's the belly.
Exactly. What street is that?
So, it's 708 State Street.
708 State.
Yep, is the address for the brewery, and we're right there. So.
Cool. Well, thanks for stopping by.
Hey, man, thank you. It was good to see you.
Likewise.
All right,
take it
well.
In, man. You too. Hey, how you doing?
Well.
You got a minute? You want to talk on the radio?
I could.
What's your name?
Lloyd.
Lloyd?
Yeah.
What's up, Lloyd? What brings you out today?
I just like hanging out here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, sometimes. Well, it looks like the musician packed up early, but...
Yeah, no, he was only I was talking to him, he's only here for an hour and an hour. He's only signed for an hour.
All right, well...
So you feel safe walking out without shoes today, Lloyd?
I think so.
Yeah? I saw some glass here. I'd be careful.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I tend to be careful. I can be careful.
Okay.
But I think the benefits outweigh the risks.
Oh, yeah?
You know, and you can adjudicate the risks.
There you go.
You just don't step on, like, you know, rusty nails.
Exactly.
What's your name?
My name is Tom. I'm the co-host of the Thursday Afternoon Show, which is what you're on right now.
Hello, Thursday.
WGXC 90.7 FM.
Cool.
And, you know, just trying
to... Just sort of like a nice place to come and hang.
Yeah, know? Yeah, that's what we thought.
Yeah.
During the summer, we try to get out on the street and do the show on the street, talk to people. It's kind of light showing here, but, you know, it's okay.
In a little bit, yeah. But it's an eclectic group.
Yep. Are you a Hudsonian?
Yeah, I've been here 3 years.
3 years,
huh? Yeah.
What brought you to Hudson?
You know, probably to get away from the city.
Well, that's a good reason.
You know, COVID.
Yeah?
You know,
Where were you in the city? Manhattan?
Well, I spent time in 125th Street, but... North Jersey and Long Island, so I'm a suburbanite. I'm basically a was.
Yeah.
Now we got the our own city here.
Yeah.
Nothing like New York.
Right. What drew you to Hudson in particular?
Oh my God, it's Grandma Lisa. Yes, it is.
It's well located. It's convenient. It has a lot of conveniences.
Yeah.
You know, I've been coming up here all my life for summers over across the river.
There you go. So you have some local connection.
Yeah. So I'm just familiar with the area and. It's just peaceful.
Great. Well, thanks for talking to us.
All right, Tom.
Take it easy. Tanya Jackson.
That's the only food.
You're live on the radio.
Live on the radio.
WGXC.
Oh, hey, WGXC.
You know it. You know it. You love it.
I know it. I love it. Community radio all day, every day.
And you got something to talk about for tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, we're doing...
Give us your beats.
We're doing the 4th annual Hudson Juneteenth celebration, 3 to 10 p.m., in and around Lifeforms Arts Center at 743 Columbia Street, Hudson, New York. It's the last day of the local Black History exhibit, Who We Be. There are going to be vendors. There's soul food. There are performers. We have the Resistance Revival Chorus coming up from New York City. We have local acts. We're having a dance party, 8:30 to 10 p.m.
Beautiful racket.
Well, we have Anise Cousin from Beautiful Racket who'll be doing the Black National Anthem. Wow. We have art stations. We'll be making art. We'll be looking at history, and we'll be living
and
it in our joy.
You're closing down that little spot of Columbia, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a bigger outdoor kind of thing.
Yes, it'll be an outdoor, indoor kind of thing. And most of it outdoors, and then people will be able to go indoors for the exhibit and also for the wellness activations. We have a whole wellness it's a whole thing. We have acupuncture, we have Reiki, we have apothecary, we have plants, we have elixirs. It's going to be an amazing day.
Awesome. Great. And you organized it all, right?
I did. And
you're exhausted?
And I cannot thank enough all of the supporters, all of the folks who have been helping in all of the different ways. It's not just me. I've been organizing it for sure, but this is a community produced.
Great. And you want to give
event.
The times again and exactly where?
3 p.m. to 10 p.m., 743 Columbia Street, Hudson, New York, Lifeforms Arts Center.
Great. Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you so
Always
much.
Good seeing you.
You as well. Appreciate
and
that.
And Nagir is still here. Still hanging out by the food. What are you getting
fish
now?
Taco.
Oh, you're waiting for the fish tacos?
Yeah.
Okay.
So and I gotta wait for Tanya's fish taco.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Through a tortured interpretation of law, of history, of present-day fact, the court has taken the law and our society and put us in a pretzel.
Damon Hewitt with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law calls the Supreme Court's decision to outlaw affirmative action in college admissions a travesty of justice. The court's conservative majority overturned decades of precedent in invalidating admissions plans at Harvard and the University of North Carolina. The ruling is expected to alter college admissions policies across the country. President Joe Biden has directed the Department of Education to analyze what practices can still ensure more diverse student bodies. The Teamsters Union says a strike is inevitable if UPS does not return a best and final contract offer by today. Teamsters President Sean O'Brien says workers are demanding higher part-time pay, more full-time jobs, and greater job security.
UPS is going to determine if UPS strikes themselves by not giving what our members deserve, and it's the best contract in the industry.
UPS delivers about a quarter of all U.S. parcels. The workers' current contract expires July 31st. A strike could be triggered August 1st if no agreement is reached. New York City is hosting a record 100,000 people in its homeless shelters. More than half are migrants. Deputy Mayor Ann Williams-Isom says the city is working to find the migrants temporary homes outside the city, as well as lawyers to help with their asylum claims.
This is a national humanitarian crisis, and we need sustained and profound support from the federal government in the form of financial aid and in the form of a national coordination.
Williams-Isom says of the 50,000 migrants now in shelters, more than two-thirds are families with children. Air quality alerts are in effect for 16 states and the nation's capital as smoke from Canadian wildfires continues to blanket parts of the Great Lakes and Mid-Atlantic regions. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser is advising residents to take precautions.
If you don't have to be outside, then don't be outside. If you do need to be outside, to wear a mask and to limit your exposure.
Meanwhile, 120-degree heat indexes are being felt from Missouri to Florida. Former Ohio State House Speaker Larry Householder has been sentenced to 20 years in prison for orchestrating a nearly $60 million bribery scheme. Householder and three others were charged in a pay-to-play scheme that helped Householder win the speakership and pass a more than $1 billion bailout for two nuclear power plants. The number of homeless residents in Los Angeles County has spiked again, increasing by 9% since last year. Nearly 76,000 people are homeless on any given night across LA County. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Fueled by 2020 election conspiracy theories, the Kansas legislature overrode the governor's veto on two 2021 bills erecting barriers to voting by mail. Citizens and Freedom to Vote groups are fighting back. Driven by debunked claims of former President Trump and his campaign legal team, the Kansas legislature passed House Bill 2183, making it a misdemeanor for anyone but a family member to touch a voter's mail ballot or to assist in requesting a ballot. For groups assisting in the return of ballots, it caps the total for an entire organization to 10. The Kansas Reflector reports that groups like the League of Women Voters have suspended voter assistance programs as a result. HB 2332 mandates notoriously inaccurate signature matching on mail-in ballots. The bill allows for both automated and human review, but unlike 24 other states, Kansas does not have a provision to cure a rejected ballot with a signature mismatch, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. The provision could disenfranchise thousands. So democracy groups sued over portions in the two bills which disenfranchise voters and restrict free speech. And after a successful appeal, the Kansas Supreme Court has agreed this week to hear the case. After oral arguments, a decision is expected before the 2024 election. We have the text of the bills, analysis, and articles at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Thank you.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Our next story looks at the three artificial floating wetlands that were recently launched into the Hudson River by the Radix Ecological Sustainability Center. These wetlands clean the river using simple and affordable biological technologies, and we're now joined by Radix's Scott Kellogg. Welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you for having me.
Well, great. We've had you on our program before to speak about these wetlands. Also part of the Rotary Ecologies Conference, and our Water Justice Fellows visited the wetlands last year. So what are the artificial floating wetlands, and how many of these have been launched previously?
So the artificial floating wetlands are, well, as the name would describe, they are comprised of native wetland plants that are attached to buoyant or floating media. In this case, it's actually a pool noodle that's shoved inside of a rigid sewer pipe, bent into a circular ring, and it has coconut coir material placed inside of it that provides a rooting medium for the water plants. And the plants grow upwards, and they dangle their roots down in the water column. The roots provide attachment site for beneficial microorganisms that help to degrade pollutants that are in the water, specifically sewage, resulting from combined sewer overflows. The microorganisms break down those nutrients, and the plants uptake them and transform them into ultimately what is a harvestable biomass. And at the same time, the wetlands provide habitat for a number of organisms living in the river, particularly fish and birds and mammals.
Now, you've done this before, I understand. So I wonder how, you know, successful it has been. And do you monitor, you know, the impact that it has?
We have done this program for several years in the past. It's an ongoing project, and we keep modifying the design with each passing year, getting wetlands that are better able to withstand being in the river year-round so as to maximize the benefit that they perform in terms of enhancing local biodiversity. The benefit of it in terms of water quality improvement is difficult to measure, as the Hudson is an incredibly large body of water with enormous flow through. So a lot of its benefit is in educational and symbolic purposes, really working with Radix's Eco Justice Youth Program and demonstrating to youth that it's possible through affordable and simple measures towards taking proactive action to improving the health of the river and really creating a rationale for bringing people to the river, which in the case of Albany, they've largely been disconnected from on account of Interstate 787 cutting off virtually all public access in the south end of Albany.
And you were talking about the way that you make it using pool noodles, sewage, a pipe, which is very common. And this is part of, I was actually just looking through your book about radical sustainability. So this is something that isn't like some hidden technology that you guys are gatekeeping. It's part of the concept so that other people can also be using these technologies and ideas to be creating their own sustainable solutions.
Yeah, the idea of artificial floating wetlands, you could say, is actually an ancient technology. A number of different human civil societies throughout the world have built floating gardens or have created gardens that are in riparian or near shore environments to take advantage of the nutrient-rich waters that are often in rivers or in estuaries. Furthermore, there's been inspiration from nature where occasionally the bank of a lake or river will break off and float around for a number of years, acting as a purification system for that body of water. The idea has been recently, I guess you could say, rediscovered and is now being employed by a number of municipalities throughout the world, specifically for the purpose of cleaning waterways and remediating stormwater runoff and waters contaminated with sewage runoff. So even 20 years ago, it was still a fairly experimental concept. There is now a substantial body of published scientific literature which supports the effectiveness of this particular remediation strategy, particularly when you consider its affordable cost. The return on investment is considerable.
So if you did have, you know, whatever resources you needed, how many of these islands would, or floating wetlands, would actually you like to see in the Hudson River?
Right. So currently we have just three deployed in the Hudson as of 2 weeks ago. And one thing I like to emphasize to people is that, yeah, while three may not be having a tremendous impact on water quality, it's a very scalable technology. And we could easily go from 3 to 20 to 100, at which point it would be having a significant impact on both water quality and also habitat creation. Because you have to remember, Albany's shoreline mostly comprises of a single concrete wall, which provides a very little edge habitat for organisms. So if we were to fill the river with 100 or more of them, I think it could be having a significant impact, and could be going its way towards restoring the islands and the ecological buffer zones that used to be prevalent in the Hudson River prior to the creation of the Port of Albany, which effectively destroyed many of them.
And these islands are also mediating algae blooms, which I know a lot of conservation areas that I walk at are having these issues with algae blooms, which are not good for the animals living in it. And then, of course, people with pets, dogs not going in it. Is this something that can be used by people who have their own pond or by conservation places to help with these algae bloom issues?
Certainly. What causes harmful algal blooms is often nutrient runoff from land, resulting from the over-application of fertilizers, agricultural fertilizers, or often from sewage runoff that causes a condition in waterways called eutrophication, which is basically an excess of nutrients, which then cause a bloom in algae, which in and of themselves are not a bad thing. They form the basis of aquatic food chains. There are some varieties, some particular species of cyanobacteria that can produce harmful toxins. One of the bigger problems, though, with algal blooms is that once the algae run out of food, they die and their bodies are consumed by bacteria, who in turn strip the oxygen out of the water and turn the water anoxic, meaning without oxygen, and create what's called a dead zone. This occurs on a massive level in the Gulf of Mexico every year, largely from nutrient runoff from the Mississippi River Valley. So this is something that's affecting waterways, both rivers, lakes, ponds. So certainly this is a technique that can be used in a number of situations to mitigate the damage caused by harmful algal blooms. As these plants will uptake those extra nutrients out of the water, turning them into vegetative tissue, and then they're not available to the algae that may otherwise be harmful.
If people wanted to learn more about this or get involved somehow, how best can they do that?
They can visit our website, which is www.radiccenter.org. Get in touch with us. We are actually going to be running boat tours throughout the summer using our solar-powered pontoon boat that can take folks, particularly South End residents, out to go see the islands and to learn about water justice issues along the Hudson River. So I encourage people to get in touch with us if they are interested.
We have about a minute left, and I just want to talk about the location, which I know because it's right by the former UAlbany Boathouse. It's a place where a lot of people do fish, and it's not in really great conditions. What specifically made you choose this location?
Island Creek Park is the only space that has public access in the South End of Albany to the Hudson River. So there is a community of people who do fish there and who do recreate there. I think it's important to draw attention to it, as there is no safe walking access to that park. The park exists, but there is no way to safely walk there. It's within a dangerous area with a lot of truck traffic. And we do bring our youth down there just to show to them in a very carefully guided way. But in one of the intentions is to just draw more attention to the area. Being the gen, it's a beautiful park and the gem that it is, but to also try and advocate for improved pedestrian access to this gem of a park.
Thank you.
Scott, can we just get once again your website?
Sure. It's www.radixcenter.org.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. H. Rose Snyder reports in the Times Union that Ingrid Amberger, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Albany, said the pattern of incoming wildfire smoke from Canada will continue through this summer. Amberger said, and I quote, "Since the fires are burning, the source continues to bring more smoke. It's going to be an ongoing issue into the summer," end quote. Amberger said air quality advisories could come regularly from the State Department of Environmental Conservation this summer. Wildfire season typically doesn't start until July in Canada, and predicted hot and dry weather is expected to exacerbate the problem. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Kat Simon in the Times Union rounds up where the fireworks will be going off in the area for the July 4th holiday. Pets and anyone triggered by the sounds of large explosions may use this list to avoid fireworks this week. June 30th, 6 to 10 p.m., Albany hosts one of the largest area displays at the Empire State Plaza with Sheila E. performing and food and beverages. July 1st at 9:30 p.m., Germantown shoots off fireworks at Palatine Park after a day of live music and more. July 2nd, 7:30 p.m., Wyndham has a good old-fashioned 4th of July celebration with fireworks at dusk and sidewalk sales, live music, and children's entertainment during the day along Main Street. July 2nd, 9:15 p.m., Saugerties shoots off fireworks at Canteen Field. The Saugerties Fire Department also leads a parade at 11 a.m. July 3rd at 9:15 p.m., Coxsackie's Independence Day celebration includes a farmer's market, food trucks, and live music from James Dykeman and Wild Blue earlier in the day at Riverside Park. July 4th at sunset, Reidbauer's Resort in Round Top has fireworks, plus an Eagles tribute band, Already Gone, will also perform at Newsy's Bear Garden at the resort. July 4th at dusk, Cairo's 4th of July celebration at the park with children's activities during the day at Angelo Cana Park. July 5th at dusk, Catskills 4th of July celebration at Dutchman's Landing Park. July 6th at dusk, East Durham's July 4th parade and fireworks is 2 days after July 4th and starts with a parade at 11 a.m. on Route 145 at the Michael J. Quill Irish Cultural Center. And July 6th at dusk, Village of Tannersville 4th of July celebration shoots off fireworks at Rip Van Winkle Lake. Hudson's Juneteenth celebration, rescheduled after the threat of rain June 17th, has been moved to June 30th. The 4th annual Juneteenth celebration in Hudson has been moved to the Light Forms Art Center from 3 to 10 p.m. Many of the performances are continuing, with the Resistance Revival Chorus at 6 p.m., Ifateo Cobbins at 7 p.m., a tribute to the late Alan Skerritt at 7:15 p.m., and a Freedom Dance Party at 8:30 p.m. The event is sponsored by the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 65 degrees. On Friday night, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Then a chance of showers after 11 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 63 degrees. And on Saturday, a chance of showers. Then a chance of showers are possible and a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. It will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 80 degrees. And on Saturday night, showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm before 2 a.m., then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 65 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXE, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Thank you.